Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Food Friday, April 19th already. I'm Ray Graff. Today we welcome back Jennifer Clare, culinary instructor, founder of Home Cooking New York. I believe she wrote a book that has knife skills in it. Before launching the school in 2002, she was a recipe editor for the Wall Street Journal, food editor at Martha Stewart Living, where she developed cookbooks, managed the cooking and entertainment department of MarthaStewart.com. Prior to that, she worked as an editor in the cookbook division of William Morrow & Company. She's an expert on what they call kitchen hacks. And like most of the great guests on this show, she just says what she wants to talk about. And she told me this morning, and I didn't print it out. So it's going to be exciting. I just don't know what it is. 800-348-2551. Jennifer Clare after the news. Ooh, hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today, we welcome back the one and only Jennifer Clare. Jennifer is a culinary instructor and the founder of Home Cooking New York. That's a cooking school in New York City and online internationally. She's the author of 6 Basic Cooking Techniques, Culinary Essentials for the Home Cook. Jennifer is a former food editor at Martha Stewart Living and the former recipe editor at the Wall Street Journal. Jennifer is also the host of the cooking podcast Kitchen Radio, or at least she was when I wrote this script, and we'll find out. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us as we go along, voxpop@wamc.org, as we find out what the topic is today, and then you can write in, voxpop@wamc.org, or 800-348-2551. Jennifer Clare, so nice to have you back.
Love being here in person. It's great. Worth the drive.
Is it?
Yeah.
Will you say that at 2:59?
Yes, okay. I will, as I head back my 80 miles south.
It's so nice of you to do this. So, you know, before we get into whatever topic we're going to roll with, how are things at the school?
Things at the school are good. I mean, they are actually good, except my oven hit the dust. I guess bit the dust is
really?
The term. Yeah. I love running a business. It's yeah. fun. But the thing that is not fun is that at any moment, 24/7, I can get a text that leads me to have a lot of scrambling. Anyways, 2 days ago, I got the text, the oven is 86. So 86, do you know what that means?
It means done.
Yeah, done. So yeah. In a restaurant parlance.
Right. Is that a restaurant term?
Yeah, 86. Oh. I think it has to do with a bar in... like a speakeasy bar in the city called Chumley's. 86 was the address, and it had to do with yelling 86 when the cops were coming.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, like going underground. Anyways, it just means it's over. So if you're in a restaurant and a dish is off the menu because they've run out, in the kitchen they'll say 86 meatballs, you know, so you know not you can't take any more orders for meatballs. Anyways, so I get a lot of texts that say like, 86 lemons. Anyways, you don't want to get a text that says 86 oven. The oven.
Yeah. So what kind of oven did you have?
Well, it's just a long, convoluted story, but this is the first oven I ever bought 11 years ago, and I was building this cooking school on a shoestring.
Yeah.
So I pretty much got the oven that I could afford,
right.
Which was an Imperial. It's an electric oven. I couldn't have any gas flames in this building because it's a two-story in Chinatown with no... sprinkler system, so you can't have any open flames.
A good plan.
Yeah. And actually, as a teacher, I don't want any open flames. That's just kind of makes me very anxious. So I got this great electric commercial stove. And unbelievably, 11 years later, it has bit the dust twice, but it's still going. So maybe I did make the right choice. But it was the least expensive oven that I could find. And we had a pizza class 2 days ago, and we cranked it up to 550.
Okay, that's a problem.
Well, it should be able to take that temperature. But it basically, a flash of light, which blinded my instructor, and then the entire coil just popped out. So
the coil popped, can't you replace
it? It didn't
the coil?
Pop out, it just kind of burned out. So that's the end of the oven, and we are a cooking school, so we kind of need an oven.
Now, time out, just a moment here. Now, I'm not Mr. Fix-It. It's not Wally's Workshop at my house. I don't, you know, but I've replaced coils in ovens. You can replace them. They pop in and pop out.
Okay, well, that's out of my wheelhouse.
They're cheap.
Yeah. No, not this one.
No?
This part is $800. Okay, I don't want to go into
that's
it.
Not cheap.
It's just unbelievable. But I'm happy I have an appliance repair guy, but it's just getting the part.
Right.
Anyways, we The challenge is trying to run the school without an oven. So we basically had to go through the whole schedule, rework a lot of the classes so there's no baked things. Like, we have one tiny little countertop oven so we can, like, roast a tray of potatoes, but we can't run our... We have a popular class called the Great British Bake Off Classics where we remake things from the show.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that one is, like, that's off the roster. So we had to, we're making English muffins instead on the stovetop instead of
nothing wrong
cakes. Yeah.
So this is the time that you will get the induction oven.
Well, right. So,
oh, it's a stove. Forget it.
No, no, I have an induction stove. I have two kitchens.
Right.
So this is the one with the electric kitchen. But I thought to myself, okay, is this the universe telling me it's time to get rid of the stove and get an induction stove? Oh, but the price tag is...
Oh, yeah.
Cause
absolutely.
For a commercial induction, it's just a lot of money. So I'm not upgrading yet.
In my very sporadic... show prep, I went to your website. You have a lot of teachers.
I do. I'm so... It's nice that you notice that, because I actually just hired my first teacher in 8 years, a new one.
Yeah.
His name is Al, and he's wonderful. But what has been really good for me is that I've sort of had the same group of teachers. We all went through COVID together. But we're growing so much that I had to hire a new person. And when you hire someone, you start sort of seeing how your business runs, because you have to see it through someone else's eyes.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, it's time for me to have a couple more systems. Like, I need an employee manual. We got like a Slack group so I could, instead of texting people at all hours that, you know, we're out of dish soap and could someone grab something on the way. Like, I have a formal way of sort of communicating with people. So it's been pretty good for me.
Yeah, what's a Slack group? Because that's the
well,
only group I kind of know.
I'm not even using Slack, but anyone who runs a business knows what it is. It's just a way of communicating, as opposed to like emails or texts.
Yeah.
It keeps all of your information in one channel, so you're not bothering people on their time off.
Yeah.
So you can check the Slack channel. We actually are using what's called WhatsApp, which is another way of communicating
that
doesn't bother people. Because I really hate bothering people, but I do have a lot of great ideas at 10:30 at night, so I want to be able to...
Throw it out there.
Throw them out there and let them check it when they want to.
Do you like being a boss?
I do.
You do?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I have a lot of ideas. In fact, I was just telling somebody this story. I went to a dinner party this week with good friends of mine. Every Sunday we get together. And we all have known each other for about 16 years, but we also don't really know what one another does for a living, because we're friends who have met through our kids and just have had, you know... You don't sit down and tell everybody your entire life career story when you meet somebody.
No, I've met people who do that.
After 15 years of knowing each other, you don't actually know what people do.
Yeah.
And so we went around the table and explained what our careers were and, like, you know, that we started after college. Maybe we took a break during parenthood. So it was kind of funny how I learned a lot about my own friends. But I was telling the story that I've run this business for 20 years, and I did have jobs where other people were my boss for about 7 years.
Like Martha Stewart.
Yeah.
Hello.
But I was also an insubordinate employee, which is a really good indication that you got to run your own business. And actually, I got called into the office twice during my tenure at Martha Stewart to be talked to.
Really?
Yes, because I was not very good at poker faces when I was being reprimanded for something that I did wrong. Because a lot of times I would think that I didn't really do something wrong. They just didn't. They had a different idea. And, you know, you're supposed to defer to your boss.
Yeah,
and that was, my face doesn't do that.
I don't do that either.
Yeah.
I have a trouble with that.
I'm like my mother. My dad used to say, my mother's face knows no guile. Like, she just couldn't show anything that wasn't in her heart.
Right.
So that was not good for employee-boss relations. So...
Did Martha actually take you in herself and say, listen,
no,
sit down?
No. But I was talked to because of how I interacted with Martha once.
Ooh.
In front of my boss. So Martha was the boss, but everybody, you know, had department heads. But I was not deferential enough to her, and I was talked to about that. So,
egos.
But those were good times. But I do like being a boss. I think I'm a good boss. So I like being able to model good bossly behavior. You know, because I think there's a lot of bad bosses out there, since I own my own business, I'm always curious, why would you choose to be a crummy boss? Because then you lose your staff. And the worst thing about having a business is being short-staffed.
Especially in this day and age.
Yes.
where it's tough.
So,
I mean, the fact that you've expanded is amazing.
Right. And my latest instructor came because he was at a place that treated him poorly. And I was like, let me just tell you about this business. No one leaves. I don't want anyone to leave, because if you do, I stop making as much money. I'm constantly stressed. I have to work more. It's like all these things. So it's like, why wouldn't you want to retain your staff?
But these are professional. These are well-experienced people from the industry.
Yeah.
Do they ever miss, you know, now I'm a teacher. I'm not doing it as much anymore. I miss that.
I think that awful statement about teachers, if you can't do, you teach.
Yeah.
I think that is insanity, because we are doing, like, most of the people who have come to me as a culinary instructor have come from another career, and that's usually in a restaurant. So
right.
If you have a culinary education, you generally are dabbling in restaurant work. Restaurant work is so exhausting and soul ripping. You know, if you're the executive chef at a restaurant, maybe you're having a good time. But anyone below that, it's a very intense environment, and chefs are sort of known for being
a little difficult.
Yeah. And so you kind of make do with that environment because it's expected.
Right.
So most of my instructors have come through that, been like, this is not a life that I like. You know, I want a family. I want time off. I want weekends off.
Yeah.
And so teaching allows you to be with people, be part of a food community, share your gifts as opposed to like toiling away.
You know, Home Cooking New York is, we talked a lot during the pandemic.
Yeah.
Everybody went to full virtual. You are now back in person.
Oh, yeah.
And you have the broken oven and everything else. But has the virtual still continued to grow?
It's actually kind of petering out.
Is it?
So for a while, yes, we did have, and I loved it because, you know, we could sort of have our hands in two pots. We were open in person, and we had all of the New York City community. And then we had people who we had, you know, met over the years of COVID all over the country and the world. And that was so fun. But, you know, and I understand, and I'm not sad about it. It was a time. It was really exciting to connect with people that way when we couldn't connect in person. But that was a chapter. It's closing. I'm cool with that.
Do me a favor. Let's not open the book again to that chapter.
Yes.
Because I'm sick
of it.
Keep
it closed.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Jennifer Clare is our guest, and I still don't know what the topic is, but we're having one heck of a good time. You want to join in, 800-348-2551 or VoxPop at WAMC.org. Vox Pop on WAMC, the Levin Brothers, 800-34, I think that was the Levin Brothers, yeah, Zach? Yeah, of course, Pete and Tony, 800-348-2551 is the number. I just saw somewhere on social media, Tony is getting together with Adrian Belew and some of the alum from King Crimson, along with Steve Vai, and they're going to do a tour of the music of King Crimson. I think Robert Fripp from Crimson is sort of retired now. He's getting a little older, and these guys are going to hit the road. Going to be cool.
Mm,
but it's not a music show. Jennifer Clare is our guest today. It's Food Friday. Jennifer is a culinary instructor, a cookbook author. She dealt with Martha Stewart already. And how was working at the Wall Street Journal? I never asked you.
Well, I worked at the Wall Street Journal, I can't remember the year, but it was a year where they got a major cash infusion because I think they were bought by, I want to say, some subsidiary of Fox.
Okay.
But they were purchased. And so they dumped a whole bunch of money into the newspaper to try to like sort of freshen it up, not make it seem like such a stodgy old newspaper. It's kind of like what old men read for a long time. It's way more current and hip now. And so they started this a new section called Pursuits, which was all about the things that people do when they're not working, all the pursuits like travel and food and music. And we kind of had this really amazing unlimited budget. So when I got hired, they had started this new food section within the Pursuits section. And it was something like Chef's Table or something. And it would be an interview with a chef.
Right.
And then the chef would supply two recipes for, to showcase the kind of foods that they make and something that people could make on their, you know, leisure time. Anyways, these recipes were always a total disaster because chefs are writing recipes for restaurants. So it's like, you know, to feed 50, and they're using ingredients that are totally accessible to restaurant owners, but not to home cooks. And so they would give me these recipes, and I would have to create recipes that worked for the home cook.
A common poison.
Right. And it was one of my favorite jobs ever. A, I was paid so tremendously.
Really?
Yeah, because they had so much money. And then B, I was also in my late 20s when I got this job. And so I was young. I was, you know, I would love to have dinner parties. So I had basically subsidized dinner parties. I would make these incredible. One of them was a vodka brined turkey.
Oh, how was that?
It was delicious.
Do tell. Explain.
Yeah. I don't even remember about it. But of course, how do I forget that? A vodka brined turkey.
Yeah.
So I would cook this meal. I would be I would get to be reimbursed for all the ingredients. And I would be paid to make the food on top of it. And then I would have a dinner party. Fully subsidized. So
oh
it was
heavens.
Really, it was probably what? 2 years. And we got to the point where my husband, at the time, a musician, you know, doing day work, I would pay him to test the recipes under my supervision,
of course. Yes.
But it was kind of these, yes, the golden years.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then I don't know how that job ended, but it was 2 years of wonderfulness, and then I somehow...
Somebody probably looked at the bottom line
I'm
and
sure
said, you know what?
The budget was like, this is insane. Why are we giving this woman so much money?
Yeah.
But I did a good job. One of my favorite things is to take a recipe and make it manageable. I love... Because that's what I do as a teacher, you know, trying to make food and cooking accessible.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I got to do.
That's a cool concept, and we're kind of doing a spin on that on May 3rd. So Jim Hendler from RPI is coming. He is a AI and cyber security
wizard.
He's like from Star Trek. Okay. I have no idea what he does. But he's going to be manning the AI, and people are going to call in or write in with a list of ingredients in their fridge. And we're going to let the AI make the recipe.
Really?
And then Chef Gail Sokol is going to be here to critique them and see if it's...
Wait, that's next Friday?
No, it's May 3rd. It's a couple of weeks.
Oh, my God. I'm tuning into that.
That'll be fun.
The AI thing is suspect to me, but I love that you're going
to
have a chef here top editing it. Because, you know, I'm curious about AI, too, but I also feel like the human element...
Absolutely.
That's more fun.
So that's great. And so you were at the Wall Street Journal and a dream job. You had Martha Stewart. Now your business has been, your school has been open, 10, 20 years now?
Well, the brick and mortar, like the public school, has been open for 15 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And the online really started. It's so funny. Yeah. With the pandemic, all of these schools and so many businesses learned the ropes really in education and schools. Really fast, and now they've banked that for the next disaster.
Maybe banking for the next disaster. I feel like that's the glass half empty way of looking at
that.
That's
my stock and trade,
right? But I think it's also just more accessibility. So, like, if you can do things online, then more people who couldn't access things in person can access it. So, like, people from Colorado can take my class. People who are kosher or halal could take my class because they're cooking in their own home kitchen, whereas they wouldn't come to mine, or people with disabilities, or, you know, I liked it because it just opened it up. And so now it's commonplace, like to zoom into a meeting or that kind of accessibility is just, it's going to be here for not necessarily the next pandemic, but just for good.
But is it, okay. Is it better? Now, you're a glass half full person,
I can tell.
You have that optimistic glow. But, you know, you made do. Everybody made do with remote during the pandemic. You're back now to in person.
Yeah.
That has to be better.
Absolutely. 100%. I don't know that anyone's arguing. I think it's just more. Like, virtual allows for more opportunities for people to engage in something. But it's definitely not better. I mean, people are better. Always. Just like AI. Who's better? The chef you're going to have here, not the AI program that's going to make a mockery of someone's refrigerator.
Are you,
you
talking
know,
bad about RPI and Dr. Jim
no,
Hendler?
No, just the AI.
Okay, fair enough. Jennifer Clare is our guest today. It's Food Friday. It's very loose today, very relaxing.
I love it.
800-348-2551. You did send some topics.
I did.
And so one of these is a word I've never even seen before. Local aquaculture.
Yeah.
Explain.
Okay. I love talking about this. So aquaculture is basically fish farming of the future, although it's not of the future. It's happening now. So typically, fish that's raised, farm raised, is done in an open body of water. So like the Atlantic Ocean, they net off a portion of it and, you know, raise the fish. So they're not creating like a totally, you know, different water system to raise these fish. But doing it in an open body of water causes a lot of problems for the local ecosystem. Yeah. So you have like 500,000 salmon in a very tight area.
Yeah.
They're eating and pooping, and all of their waste just flows through the nets into the surrounding environment and damages a lot of ecosystems. There's a lot of things that are not great about farm raising.
Okay.
So this allow this raise aquaculture is basically fish tanks on land. So it's like managed farm raising of fish, but not in open bodies of water. So you can manage the waste, which is a big problem of grazing so many, you know, living things in a small area. It's the concentration of waste.
Yeah.
So if it's done in a managed environment, these giant tanks on land.
How giant?
Massive. I mean, acres.
Really?
Like, it's like airplane hangar size.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, okay. You need a lot of water.
Yeah.
So the waste is filtered in a way that becomes manure that they can send as a secondary, sell as a secondary product to other local agriculture as fertilizer. So it's a way of protecting the environment. It's sustainable. It's also, I mean, it's those are the two big things that were that are a problem with farm raising. So aquaculture is that. It's farm raising, but in on a land environment, which reduces the environmental impact and keeps it more sustainable. It is very expensive. It's the startup costs of creating an aquaculture, you know, farm, basically. It's very expensive. So the reason I got excited about it is because so I live in the Hudson Valley, but my school is in Manhattan.
Right.
And we have a class called How to Cook Fish. And so we're always sourcing four different kinds of fish to teach people different kinds of fish and how to cook it so they eat more fish at home. Because most people are like, I'll stick it in the microwave or under the broiler. So just
never
giving them,
put fish in a microwave.
Yeah, well, people do.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're always, you know, trying to choose fish that people will buy. Like, we don't teach people how to cook tuna, fresh tuna, because it's like $35 a pound. And we don't want it. Why teach people to do that? That's too expensive.
Yep.
So we started noticing this new brand or basically purveyor on Fresh Direct, which is the grocery delivery service that we use, called Local Coho. And we were buying it because it's local. We like trying all local things. And it's from this farm in Auburn, New York, in the Finger Lakes. So they are a New York State aquaculture company. And they're distributing all around the Finger Lakes area, wholesaling to chefs and restaurants. But they're only, as far as I know, only retailing it in one place.
And
that's
New York City.
Yeah, in New York City.
Okay.
So we've been buying this fish, and it's fantastic.
Is it really?
It's so good.
Can you taste the difference?
Yes.
Are you that much of a connoisseur?
I can taste not the difference. Like if you put farm-raised salmon next to wild salmon, I could taste the difference. But this is still farm-raised salmon aquaculture versus farm-raised salmon in open bodies of water. I don't know that I can taste the difference.
Yeah.
But it's a really clean taste. I mean, I'll buy anything that's sustainable, environmentally more friendly. If it's the same price point especially, it's an easier sell to students. I also just think that it is the wave of the future because our bodies of water are only getting more polluted.
Yeah.
So they're not going to get cleaner ever. So this is really the land management of fish. Aquaculture is how we are heading. You're having someone from AI on because it is the next thing that's coming down. So aquaculture is that. It's because it's so expensive. You have to get so many grants. You have to get cash infusions from venture capitalist companies. So it's not cheap, but it is. Like, they're one of the first that I know of.
Yeah.
And it will get less and less difficult to start these farms as it becomes something that people will buy. They'll be like, oh, this is a great choice. Like, I'm buying organic bananas now. But people haven't heard of aquaculture because it's such a small sliver of what's available.
Now, you say grants. Now, governments, states,
yeah,
governments
New York
are
state,
on board.
US.
What's the advantage for a state to do that?
I guess... the economy.
Yeah.
Like, it's a local economy. So are there many bodies? I don't even know what they are, but trying to, you know, revitalize the economies of especially upstate towns.
Yeah, I'm just wondering about the environmental impacts of this aquaculture, this farming in huge tanks. Are people up in arms about any aspects of that?
No. I can't imagine, because if you're someone who's studying the environmental impacts of farm raising fish, which is a lot, this is where you can still, people want fish. It's like, not farm raising fish is not the answer. It's how to do it better and still keep the price something that's not like only the most, you know, wealthy consumers can buy. So they've managed to do that. I don't know that they've flushed it out yet, because it's still very, I'm sure they're all in debt. Again, they're getting money from the government and private investors to do it. But if they can figure out how to do it less expensively, which you do when you duplicate your business model.
Yeah.
That's what they're trying to expand.
But on the consumer end, the price point's still pretty up there.
Well, they're charging between.
Yeah, well, let's not do prices exactly.
You can't do that.
Well, you can do general.
It's no different than what you're paying for other fish, other farm-raised fish.
Yeah. And so let's get back to the cooking of the fish for a minute, since we're on this topic. Mm-hmm. You said you had four different kinds of fish that you use and to show different ways.
Well, we rotate based on like what is good and like what's affordable, but we like to show different kinds of fish so people, because this is salmon. Everybody seems to know salmon. They like salmon. They cook salmon.
Slap it on a grill.
Right. So, but we also want to introduce people to fish that are lesser known that you would not, if you're not confident, buying new things in the supermarket is not going to be something you're going to play with.
No.
You'll be like, let's stay safe.
Right.
So we will show them like Spanish mackerel, which is really high in the good fats, but people do not know about mackerel.
You
don't
go to cook a Spanish mackerel. That's got to be a setup for a joke, by the way. It has to be.
It's no different than how we would teach someone to cook salmon. So there are different kinds of fish. There are lean fishes like cod and halibut. People like them because they're light and they're not very fishy.
Yeah.
And then there's a whole category of fishy fish, which are for people who don't mind the strong fish aroma. Salmon is one of them. The higher fat content that they have, the more aromatic they are.
Interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah. So that's good for people who like fish and bad for people who don't like fish. So salmon is in there, swordfish, bluefish, mackerel, sardines, all the yummy ones.
So you rotate these fishes and people have to cook them. And I only know really one way to cook. The only fish I've ever cooked, swordfish steak, tuna steak.
On the grill. Yeah.
But there's got to be other ways.
Right. Well, so you are our customer, even though I know you'll never come to my school.
Exactly.
Right? Because we know that people cook fish one way. They feel comfortable, and that's how they do it. So they grill it all.
Yeah.
So we show them how to cook it in parchment paper, which is basically just opening up a piece of parchment paper, putting your fish in it, and then closing up the book. We don't even have you crimping it because no one's going to do that. It just protects fish from drying out in the oven.
So the parchment paper doesn't burn.
No, it doesn't.
Why? I've always wondered why.
If you, hold it over a flame, it will go up.
But if you put it in a 400-degree oven, it's not going to burn?
Yeah, but that's not how air works. Like, it has to touch a flame. So there should not be any open flames in your oven. That is a no-no for oven manufacturing.
Okay.
So, no, you can't.
I did not know
that. It is called baking paper. So it's a great way of trapping moisture and steam in a cooking situation, and it's great for fish because fish dries out really fast, and also it cooks very, sort of quickly.
Yeah.
So if you trap in the steam, it cooks even more efficiently.
Interesting.
And we do pan frying, so you can have crispy, like people who like a nice little crust on their fish.
With that. Yeah.
We braise it. We do like
braised fish.
Yeah, because I like braising because you make basically make a one pot meal.
So you put it in the Instapot. And go to town.
No, that's different. No. I'm just saying in a pan, like we put like sliced tomatoes and bok choy or cabbage and, scallions, and you cook it in like a broth. So you have cooked vegetables on the bottom, and then you just put your raw fish on top and slap a lid on it. And the aromatic steam from the vegetables cooks the fish.
You know what, Jennifer Claire? We're going to take a break here because I saw you visibly wince when I said Instapot, and I want to get to the bottom of this. We're going to take a break. I think we've touched the nerve, and we are making progress, 800-348-2551. Food Friday, and if you want to email voxpop@wamc.org is the place. Food Friday. Ray Graff with you, joined today by Jennifer Clare, founder of Home Cooking New York and an all-around interesting person. The number here is 800-348-2551. Brendan writes in, my high school offered aquaculture class back in the late 90s. We removed our nitrogenous waste by running the water for the aquaculture through a hydroponic setup to grow vegetables. Mm-hmm. Been a long time that I've been thinking of it. Would make an interesting solution for urban farming.
Well, it is. So a lot, my first introduction to aquaculture was at a farmer's market, maybe in Beacon, but it was like 15 years ago. And they sold two things, trout that they grew in a farm and also like lettuce, because they would do that. They would take the waste and they would have it nutrify a hydroponic crop that was already in water. So they're dealing in water. So why not grow the things that grow in water are lettuces, mostly lettuces.
Lettuce grows in water?
Yeah, hydroponic growing means growing something. That's what hydroponic means. Hydro,
but it doesn't
water.
Always grow in. You can grow it in the ground.
No, but I'm saying if you're already managing an aquaculture facility, you got plenty of water. So yes, they were often doing it like almost above the tank, so they were growing the lettuces, and they were delicious.
So cool.
Yeah, so fish raised greens.
This is from Edward. Can you guess the? I'm sorry. There may be some typos. One of the things, when you write in, you bear in mind that...
spell check, people.
A, I don't read all that well. And two, if there are long words, we got no shot. Three, just check the syntax and things. I'll read this and try to make sense of it as I'm going.
Okay.
Can your guest, the gas addicts, that there is no difference in cooking between electric and gas stoves and ovens? It's just habit.
So are we switching from aquaculture to
electric? I don't
electric?
Know. No, we're not switching to
it's
anything.
It's true. Well, I'm not a fan of electric stoves at all. I'm a fan of induction, which is an electric stove, meaning that it plugs into the wall, but it doesn't cook with electric heat. It cooks with magnetic energy. So electric stoves aren't responsive. Like, you turn them on to high, and then when you want to turn them down the way you would turn down a flame, it takes a very long time for that coil to cool. Induction is different. It's still an electric power source, but the way that the food is cooking is with magnetic energy. So when you turn it up and down, it's like on off, just like gas. So yes, induction is amazing, and I think just as responsive as gas. Now, it may be not. If someone has an experience with induction cooking from 10 years ago, it's different. Technology has changed. But just to be clear, electric stoves are different than, like, electric cooktops are different than induction cooktops.
Okay, very good. Now let's get back to this Instapot, because when I said that, you really scowled.
Okay.
You scowled.
I think you misinterpreted my wince. It's just that I don't teach induction cooking because I mean, Instapot cooking because there's nothing for me to teach that's like in a closed system.
Yeah.
So I am pro Instapot for people who are not at home during the day and want a home cooked meal. I think it's incredible.
Well, I have one. I bought one
for
my wife.
Are you using it?
Oh, hell no.
Okay.
No,
your
I mean, it's not an instant, but it's like that. It's a magic, whatever. I forget the brand.
Crock pot.
Well, no, but this has pressure cooker and everything else in it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we used it once. It's lovely.
Okay. Well, maybe you've just answered my...
No. Do I run a cooking school? I'm a radio host. I don't know anything about anything.
I don't poo-poo anything that makes people cook more.
All right, fair enough. Jennifer Clare is our guest, and then we're going to hit the phones here in a minute. You did bring something cool. We're going to check that out. Hudson Valley Fisheries in Hudson do aquaculture. And
fantastic.
That's from Brad. Yeah, so thanks, Brad.
It's possible. And there's also, or there was, I wish I knew if they're still around, but in Newburgh, New York, they used to have an aquaculture shrimpery. I don't know what the term is, but they were raising shrimp there.
I wish they still would. Yeah. Okay, here's the thing. Mm-hmm. My kids, New Year's, whatever, they love the shrimp cocktail.
Yeah.
And I always go out to get it to the stores around, not the fish market where I should go.
Mm-hmm.
It's all Southeast Asian fish farms.
Don't buy it.
Okay, well, that's my... Okay, as you know, I'm not the healthiest fellow in the world, but that's always been my inclination.
It's a disaster, right? So.
Right.
Farm-raised shrimp are the worst.
Yeah.
So I'll buy farm-raised other things, but shrimp from Asia, not just China, but Vietnam, India,
it's
unregulated. They give them so many antibiotics. It's also the labor that is used are so abused. It's just a terrible system. Terrible.
So I'm interested
in this. So stay away from all farm-raised shrimp from Asia. If you want to get it farm raised, get it from South America. But the best, and which is available everywhere, is just wild caught. There is nowhere that you can't buy that in this day and age. It's a little more expensive.
You can't necessarily find it in all the grocery stores.
Maybe you're not looking, but because shrimp can be at the fish market or the fish section, you know, if usually there's a person behind it, or in the frozen food section. So you can buy bags of frozen wild shrimp.
Yeah.
Because most shrimp is frozen when it's caught to keep it fresh. So it's buying frozen shrimp is terrific.
Well, you know what? This business, I'd like to find out if the Newberg thing is still operational.
Yeah, that somebody can call in if it was. It was, but I haven't heard about it, and I'm kind of a food person, and they're only 5 miles away, so I feel like it's not around.
Kind of a food person. Let's go to Paul in Montague. Paul, you're on.
Hi. I wanted to, contest some of the glowing reports about aquaculture. I have personal experience. I work in the heating and cooling business, working in such facilities, as a contractor coming in. And they use huge amounts of electricity and power.
Yes.
I mean, just huge amounts. And they also, from what I observed, have real big water quality problems and really serious disease problems in a lot of the fish. Now, it's been a while since I've worked in those facilities, but
yeah, I think you should give them a chance.
The sustainability of them is pretty hard to imagine.
Well,
and just getting to the point of fish eating in general is a very unsustainable practice. We have overfished the oceans. And the species are all, lots of them are in decline because of this insatiable appetite for fish, which is not even the necessary food.
Right. That is all true, but we aren't going to get people to stop buying fish, especially shrimp, especially salmon.
Well,
it's just rampant.
We will, because at the rate we're going, there aren't going to be any left to eat.
Okay.
That may be true, but like Ray said, I'm the glass half full gal. So there is a great website. First of all, there's a watchdog of our oceans for fish that are eaten by humans. It's called the Monterey Bay Aquarium. And they have a website. They also have an app that you can download called Seafood Watch. And they are the watchdogs of all the waters. And they are always rating fish for sustainability, environmental impact, overfishing. So they're, not reproducing. So if you're ever curious about fish that you eat and seeing how sustainable it is and what are the other alternatives to that fish that you buy all the time but maybe don't know what the better choices are, you go to the Seafood Watch website. It's very user-friendly. You type in the fish, and it will tell you where it falls in its sustainability. So there is a lot of information that people just don't have, and you're right. If we're going at this rate, we are going to be out of fish.
And a lot of other things.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Paul, thanks a lot. That's a good call. Appreciate it. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Jennifer Clare is here from Home Cooking New York. Are you still selling any of the books? We've talked about the knife skills before.
I mean, yes. I mean, the cookbook came out a long time ago, so it's just slow.
I got some plastic knives here if you want to show me any.
No.
Oh, yeah?
I'm not. I know you always put out plastic stuff for
me. What do you want for me to do? That's all we have.
I always bring my own silverware for you.
So what'd you bring?
Okay.
Now that it's 10 minutes to go in the program, what'd you bring?
Here's some real silverware so we don't have to throw it away.
Oh, look at you.
Okay, so I brought rice. Why did I bring you rice?
Great question.
Okay. So at my farmer's market, there is a new, it's not a new vendor, it's probably been there for 2 years. It's called Great Joy Farm. Anyways, New York State is an amazing climate for grains. New York State grains are something that I know there is a lot of interest around in my world. I have one of my former instructors, June Russell, works at Glenwood, and they have a grain-to-table initiative, getting more farmers to raise more grains as a crop alternative. So when you are in the agricultural business, the more variety of crops you grow, the better it is for your soil.
You rotate them.
Exactly. Yeah. So grains are easy to rotate. They're a great way of nutrifying the soil, creating diversity, and also raising crops that are nutrient dense. So, and that's, you want how we were just talking about the sustainability of fish.
Yeah.
It's going to, you know, it's an expensive way to get protein.
Right.
But there are a lot of grains that are low impact and high nutrition value. And those are the crops that we should be focusing on. So I did not even know you could grow rice in New York State, but you can.
Okay.
So this is rice.
New York rice.
It is grown in New York. And I have to say, this website, before I got here, I was like doing a crash course on like this, because this rice I wanted to serve you. I just wanted to know more about its production. And there's a video on the website of Great Joy Farm in Middletown, New York. And they did a pretty good job in a 5-minute clip of explaining what it takes to grow rice from start to finish. And my mind was blown.
Really? Is it tough?
It's so hard.
Why?
The labor involved in planting rice and cultivating it and weeding it. And I was just looking at all the machines that they have to own just to put the rice plants once they are germinated and grow, like in a greenhouse, like you have little tomato seedlings. So that's what you do for rice too. You plant a rice grain in soil until it turns into a shoot, and then you transplant the rice, you know, plant into water, our very watery field. And that has to be done one by one. I mean, it's mind-boggling. So they have machines to do it, and then they send a whole fleet of ducks into the paddies to weed and eat insects.
The ducks.
The ducks, because the same place that sells this rice, which is just the most incredible rice I've ever had, also sells duck eggs, because they are a balance. Like, they have figured out ways of creating sustainable farming practices.
Did you stop at a dispensary on the way?
No, because I have no idea. I do sound like I've drunk the Kool-Aid.
Wow, that's
this
crazy.
This is how
talk.
I get about food. I get really very excited. Anyways, this rice, the price of this rice is no different than like Lindeberg or whatever. You know, like you go to the supermarket to buy rice.
Yeah.
They come in plastic containers,
yep,
you know.
So, or bags.
In fact, so this is about $5 a pound. Anyways, once you watch this video, you will never think of rice the same way. Just the amount of energy it takes to make rice, people think of it as like a throwaway thing, like something you put food on top of. But it is an incredible crop. So anyways,
it's a staple for 3/4 of the world.
I know,
or more.
But it's seen as like, again, people should know more about what goes into making food, because you would throw away a lot less of it. It breaks my heart.
I love that.
When I have to scrape plates at the school, like I had a party of 8 people came in. We did a pasta making class. They're filling their plates with food. And then luckily we compost. So I'm scraping into a compost bucket instead of the garbage. But it makes me sad and irate at the same time.
Especially when someone goes for a second plate and then doesn't finish it.
And there's so much food that needs to go to other people. And it's just like people don't appreciate what they have.
Anyways, I dig that. Yeah.
So I brought you some rice that I made this morning. It's their sweet rice. And it's very sticky. It sort of mimics sort of a Thai rice.
Is it sticky because you didn't make it properly?
No,
or is that
it's because it's
a
high starch content.
Okay.
And then I brought you some. I'm a little obsessed with chili crisp, which is...
What the heck is that?
It's like, you know what the word umami is?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's like flavor, like what?
No, most guests on the show will say a word and be like, Ray, do you understand what this means?
So are you lying to me? Do you know
what it
means?
No, I've heard it before. Okay. It's been said before. I've done the show for many years.
Right. It's a Japanese word and it means deliciousness. It's basically a word we don't have in American parlance. Yeah. It just means like all the delicious flavors in your brain kind of explodes when you eat it. So a lot of it is like miso, soy. So I made this chili crisp, which is like...
Am I supposed to put it right on
I'm
there?
I'm just going
to
drizzle it on top of your rice. There you go.
Wow, that's a lot of chili.
Okay.
All right, you're going to have to take the rest of the show on your own. All right, let's try it.
All right, well, I'll
so
eat
this
it with
is,
you.
This is very sticky rice.
It's called sweet rice, and it's got a great texture. That chili crisp is pretty damn good.
Wow. That is great rice.
It's called chili crisp because it's got all the spicy things in, like, you know, crushed red pepper flakes, Korean pepper flakes, but it also has crisp crunch in it. So it has like dehydrated garlic, which you can buy in the supermarket. It has crushed peanuts in it. It has sesame seeds.
I love that. That is delicious. By the way, you've never really brought a spicy thing to the show.
You
right?
know what? And I paused because I was like, is Ray going to be like one of those people who doesn't like spice?
No, I love spice, but you get to see. There's 5 minutes left. You'll see my head become a sponge.
Yeah.
It just gets very, I sweat a lot from stuff. Okay.
I'm glad that we did this the last 5 minutes.
I have Germanic stock, and yeah. they don't handle the spice well.
And I know you well enough that I also, listeners, I emailed Ray this morning. I said, do you like salmon? I almost brought in salmon from—
That would have been all right.
I know. But I was afraid. It's a small little room we're in here.
Yeah.
I was like, I didn't want to leave you with the smell of salmon for weeks to come.
Jim Lavoulis is in after us at 3:30. He loves salmon. He's always cooking it upstairs to keep it away from everyone else.
Okay.
Well, you know, I can deal with salmon. The sushi show that I did?
Right.
Oh, someday I'll tell you about that show.
Okay. See, I didn't want to be one of those guests that you have to, like, tell your— stories about. I'm
always a good host until after you're gone. John, our buddy John Fisher from the CIA writes in.
Oh.
The only shrimp farm I know is Newburgh.
Right, that's the one I'm talking about.
It's Beacon, not Newburgh. Again, John doesn't check his—
I don't think it's Beacon because I live in Beacon.
It says beaconfisheries.com. Look, John Fisher, you know—
What's the address?
He can be a pain, but he's usually right about a lot of things.
Well, then I'm clicking on this link so I can see where it is.
Are you clicking on a link on my phone? I didn't see it.
Hold on. Beacon Fisheries. Where is this?
In Beacon?
Well, it's definitely not in Beacon. I live in Beacon. I would know, but I'm curious where it is. I'll keep scrolling until we can figure this out.
So this is fun for the listeners.
This is in Jacksonville, Florida.
Oh, really?
It's called Beacon Fisheries.
But it's in Jacksonville, Florida.
Right. So maybe,
John was wrong.
Well, he's not wrong. It is called Beacon Fisheries, but it's just not near here. It's in Florida.
Oh, John.
Yeah, but they are. John. They're growing shrimp, scallops. What else are they doing here? Well, that's fascinating.
They're in Florida.
Crab,
right?
Lobster, and scallops.
Okay.
Anyways.
That's nice, and that's all sustainably, presumably.
I guess.
Unless you talk to John over in Montague, Mass, and then maybe not.
But— well, I mean, that's the thing. When something new comes out, it's never going to be 100% better. So people sort of glom onto the things that are just as bad, but it's true. But there's innovation. So you're getting rid of some of the bad things, but you can't dismiss it just because it's not the perfect solution.
By the way, I'm sure most of everything John said is accurate.
Yeah.
But
true.
It is sort of emblematic of a certain public radio listener that is always like, oh, man,
right, but also
this
then
is the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
A lot of these places, if you already have a mind with the, you know, to the environment, then you're going to get solar panels. So a lot of your electrical load is going to be taken care of. So, but, you know, so there is innovation on all fronts. No one is trying to, like, get away with something.
Well, I'm sure some people are trying to get away with something.
I guess, right,
I mean,
again,
we see a lot of that actually going around at the present time. All right, Jennifer Clare, we only have about a minute left.
Okay.
So let's talk business here for a moment.
Business, okay.
Well, your business,
right? Oh,
mine,
okay.
You got the Home Cooking New York. How do people find out about it?
Well, I guess everything you ever could possibly want to know about me is going to be online at homecookingny.com.
Mm-hmm.
All the various facets of our offerings. I'm actually branching into women in business retreats. You were asking me what I like about being a business owner. I love it. I love being in business. I also like being a woman in business because there seems to be a camaraderie among women who run businesses. There's sort of like a sisterhood. And so this woman who used to run an organization called Hudson Valley Women in Business.
Yeah.
She's coming down to New York City to run these business retreats with women like me who just need to collaborate and talk with other women in different industries. You know, how do you deal with various challenges? But it's like a support group, and I'm starting them.
But you don't need a support group.
Yes, I do. Yes, I'm doing well, but everybody needs emotional support.
No, we don't.
Okay,
We don't need that.
Anyway, so Women in Business is going to be my new sort of side hustle, like creating these forums for women to be able to share resources with one another.
Well, I thought that was a pretty mellow hour, Jennifer Clare.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we can't go another hour, but maybe come back again?
I will. Absolutely.
Support comes from Herzog's Garden Center, Kingston, specializing in hand-selected trees, shrubs, perennials, annuals, and tropical and flowering houseplants from sources throughout the Northeast. Herzog's.com. Troy Waterfront Farmers Market, indoors at the Troy Atrium, Saturdays 9 to 2. Local food, produce, flowers, plants, music, Maker's Market, moving outside May 4th for the 25th summer season, troymarket.org. And Saisonnier, Kinderhook Bar and Restaurant, more than 125 beers in a historic setting, plus wine, cider, sandwiches at Boards, Saisonnier.us. Once again, thanks to Jennifer Clare of Home Cooking New York for being here today. Thank you for listening. And thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer, phones expertly screened today by Barb King. I'm Ray Graff. On Monday, we got an interesting show for you. It's Medical Monday, and I hope you join us for that at 2 p.m. Meantime, have a splendid weekend.